I want to tell you about a podcast you should check out. It's called Understood Explains. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Urtube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs. The latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. As a parent myself of a child who's had an IEP since kindergarten, and he's now a 10th grader, I know how confusing, overwhelming, frustrating, sometimes daunting the whole process can be. I checked out an episode of Understood Explains called The Difference Between IEPs and 504 Plans. And what I love about it is how easily Juliana explains everything. She answers common questions that probably every parent or caregiver has. She dispels myths and is concise and to the point. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. And there's a direct link in the show notes if you need it.
At some point, we have to concentrate our efforts and our time and our top people if we want to go deep instead of wide. In fact, the research shows that it takes 34 hours to move somebody from an acquaintance to a friend. So at some point, I've got to get clear about the people I'm most curious about and I see the most reward from. And I don't mean that selfishly, but that I'd get the most value from deepening and find ways to be kind of intentional there would be the first thing.
You're listening to Make Some Noise Podcast, episode number 598 with guest Danielle Jackson. Welcome to Make Some Noise Podcast, your guide for strategies, tools, and insight to empower yourself. I'm your host, Andrea Owen, global speaker, entrepreneur, life coach since 2007, and author of 3 books that have been translated into 18 languages and are available in 22 countries. Each week, I'll bring you a guest or a lesson that will help you maximize unshakable confidence, master resilience, and make some noise in your life. You ready? Let's go. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm so glad that you're here. I'm so grateful for your time, and I always want to make sure that I tell you that from the beginning. 2 quick announcements. First, you can still sign up for Write Your Way Through It. Did you want to join us and you're late to the party? AndreaOwen.com/program is where you'll find the information. You can still join us. We got started last week, but I've dropped the price a little bit, and you can still get in and get plenty of value and takeaways from the group. So AndreaOwen.com/program. For Write Your Way Through It. And the other thing is that I have a special private secret podcast series that is taking those who are interested through my psychedelic therapy journey. It's totally free. It's just not something that I'm going to go into great lengths and detail with on this show, on my regular feed. So if you want the extra information, if you're interested in maybe doing it yourself or just interested in general, I'm going to be releasing like mini-sode-ish episodes over there. And if you have questions, you can DM me on Instagram. I'm Hey Andrea Owen over there. And I'll answer them on that podcast. If you want to sign up for that particular podcast feed, it's AndreaOwen.com/journey. And I don't know if I'm going to be super regular about releasing episodes, but every time I release one, you'll get a quick email, or if you subscribe, you'll see it in your podcast feed. And I'm excited about it. I've already done a couple of ketamine therapy sessions with MindBloom, and it's been interesting. It's been helpful so far. I definitely feel like I've seen some results, and it's just going to keep going. There are 6 total sessions with this, so I'll keep you posted over there, AndreaOwen.com/journey. And for Write Your Way Through It, AndreaOwen.com/program. All right, we have a repeat guest on today because Danielle Jackson is just so amazing. And because I feel like our female friendships are so important, I had to have her on again so we could talk about more specific things. And I'm excited for you to hear this conversation. I think it's important to everyone. Friendships are one of those things that we tend to put on the back burner when we get to this age. We have so many other responsibilities. And I think it can be so helpful in our lives to have an expert come on and talk about it. Let me tell you a little bit about her. Danielle Bayer-Jackson is a certified friendship coach and national speaker dedicated to teaching women how to create and maintain meaningful female friendships. She's been featured in NBC News for her expertise, and her advice has been quoted in several other media outlets, including Psychology Today, Well and Good, the Tampa Bay Times, and Insider. A former high school teacher, Danielle founded Friend Forward, a platform dedicated to teaching women how to create and sustain meaningful friendships. She uses her teaching skills as an educator to coach women through ways to navigate common friendship conflicts, outlining her framework for creating platonic intimacy through difficult conversations, and it has been shared in several women's media outlets. You can learn more about Danielle and her work by visiting betterfemalefriendships.com. And so without further ado, here is Danielle. Danielle, welcome back.
I'm so glad to be back. How are you?
I'm so good and so glad to have you back because I don't think we could ever have enough episodes around female friendships because it's so important. So thank you for coming back. And you have a new book out that's coming out next week as we record this. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the things that are in that book. And I'm going to pop a link in the show notes for the first episode you were on. It was episode 567, everyone. And in that episode, we talked about maintaining female friendships. We talked about how to approach a friendship when it feels one-sided. I asked you what you thought about the stereotype around women being catty. You talked about that and how long it takes. So it's a lot of good information in there. But today we're talking a little bit about what's in your book, Fighting for Our Friendships. I'm curious why that title? Let's start there.
You know, I just, when I was looking at the research around women's cooperation, communication, and conflict, something kept emerging. And the theme was that women's friendships are certainly deeper than men's friendships, but they're more fragile. And so I always wonder, like, wait, but why is that? Why are they so profound and intimate? But we have issues and we're ending them. And so I just feel like in a world or a culture rather that's telling people to opt out when things get harder, there's tension. I really am committed to teaching us how to opt in. And again, there are times when the friendship expires and it's run its course, but how do we build a certain type of resilience is what I'm curious about. And it was awesome to have an opportunity to lay that all out in the book.
Okay, good. I love that. Quick, just anecdote. I wrote my very first book in 2012 and it was called 52 Ways to Live a Kick-Ass Life. And they're letting me revise it. And I'm so grateful because one of the chapters in there, and they're super short, like 750 word chapters. One of the chapters is titled Dump the Friends You've Outgrown. And I'm like, ooh. I was young. Forgive me, everyone. It was the days of toxic positivity. Please forgive me. But yeah, I'm revising that. I'm like, wait. Nope. I changed my mind. A little bit different. Okay, so you talk in the book about three affinities that bring women together and also tear them apart. Can you give us a little tidbit on what those are?
Yeah, so it's been really fun to study the research across multiple disciplines. So what does psychology have to say about friendship, you know, that world? What do we learn about friendship and connection through linguistics and how men and women speak differently and just all these different things. And I noticed these themes and it seems like no matter what I studied or which research findings came out, there were three central things that women place of high, high importance in their female friendships. And those three things are symmetry, support, and secrecy. So symmetry is a feeling of sameness and equality. We really value egalitarianism, meaning feeling like we're equals. Whereas for men, it's kind of normal for them to maybe like one up each other, razz each other, compete. There's space for that. But for us, it kind of feels like a threat to the friendship to do things like that. So symmetry is super important, that sameness and that equality. We also really value support. In fact, the research shows that the number one thing that women seek in their same-sex friendships is emotional support. And so not to say a man wouldn't value having that, but it certainly ain't the number one thing he's using as criteria to vet his friends. And then finally, secrecy. So not necessarily like literal secrets, but feeling like we're in a vault together. Because women really engage in self-disclosure. That is the glue of women's friendships, and it's how we establish and negotiate trust. So if I feel like I'm in this with you, and I value mutual prioritization, meaning if you're my number one, I like feeling like I'm your number one too, those things are things that women really value. So whenever there's any kind of perceived violation in one of those areas, it can bring tension to the friendship.
Okay. What is your take? I don't know if you write about this in the book or not. And this is just my own personal curiosity about your opinion around gossip. Because for a long time, we kept hearing around friendships or just in general that like gossip is bad. Don't gossip. You're quote unquote a bad person if you engage in gossip. Mm-hmm. And then I've seen some articles here and there just in passing that this is actually a way that women bond. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious either what the research says or what your professional opinion is around that.
Yeah. So I agree with you. I'm seeing the whole like, don't gossip. That's such a horrible, crappy friend thing to do. And like, okay, I just wanted to shed some light on that. And yes, we definitely talk about this in the book. But the best way I've heard it described is Deborah Tannen, who is a sociolinguist. And she asked the question, are you talking about or are you talking against? Because one of the number one things we like to talk about is other people's lives. Sure. It's interesting, like from a basic sociological perspective, it is interesting to talk about other people's lives.
Tell stories.
Yeah, of course. We're storytellers. That's what we've been doing since the dawn of time, right? And it's also how we kind of gauge how we learn norms. Like if you're telling me about something that happens with the woman down the street, it's how I learn what's acceptable here, what's not, who's a friend, who's a foe. And women are the hubs of information, you know? So it's important to be able to discuss what's happening, right? But I think what makes the difference is, am I talking against these people? Am I taking pleasure in talking against these people? I think that's different than exchanging information that might be helpful in some kind of way to help me determine what are the norms, who's safe, what's okay to do here or not, what are certain consequences. That's also how we learn, not just through our own direct experiences, but through other people's and learning what happened to them based on choices they made. That's how we learn. And so I think for the woman who's trying to gauge, am I gossiping? Am I not? Ask yourself that primary question. Are you talking about or are you talking against?
Mm-hmm. Are you talking about or are you talking shit?
Pretty much.
I like that distinction. And so it sounds like, yes, it's okay, but it's incredibly nuanced.
Sure. And gossip itself, you know, from what I'm learning, the word originally meant like god sibling, like gossip. And it just referred to the women who are helping the woman who's like giving birth. And then, of course, when you're in that room and you guys are talking and caring for the baby, we're talking and things like that. Over time, it took on a negative connotation and began to be associated exclusively with women. And so we see women in the corner chatting. We just assume, oh, they're up to something. They're gossiping, right? Mm-hmm. But gossip is to exchange information about a person who's not present. But yeah, it definitely can be something sinister, you know, depending on what you're saying. Yeah.
Or bring people together. Okay. In the book, I know you talk about, and forgive me if you don't have them all memorized. I kind of get irritated sometimes when people ask me these questions about my books and I'm like, oh, where's my book? Like, but you talk about the 9 most challenging quote unquote friend types and scripts, how to specifically navigate them. So can you give us like 3 or 4 of them, or maybe like the most common or the most challenging?
Yeah. So in the book, it's divided into 3 parts. The first part is about taking an aerial view of women's friendships. Like if you got up in a helicopter and you looked down at female friendship, what are the mechanics? Why do we do what we do from a high level view? But in part 2, we get down on the ground. How do you navigate the day-to-day business of being friends? Because that determines the trajectories if you piss me off one day and what I make of that and the whole thing. And so when it came to the friend types, we put in there, you know, some signs that your friend's this type, some things that might be going on with her to help you gain a little compassion, right? I'm not saying you need to tolerate it, but having a little compassion for where she's coming from, and signs you might need to end it. And then finally, signs that that friend type might be you. Because mm-hmm. to other people in your life, you might be the clingy friend, the negative friend. So we talk in there about, you know, the clingy friend, which is a big one we hear about, the negative friend. So no matter what you talk about, somehow you're feeling depleted by the end of that conversation and you feel bad about it because you want to be loyal, but it's just so, so dang hard. We talk about, you know, the jealous friend. That's number one. Even if you Google female friendship, it auto-populates with female friendship jealousy. You know, like that's how prevalent that idea is. And we talk about the love obsessed friend, right? The girl who's my girl until she gets a man. And then, oh my God, you know,
like, but Charlotte, how do from we Sex in the City? Yeah.
Yeah. So hard. And so again, we just kind of go through, okay, what does it look like? And so we just want to look at, why is our friend behaving the way she is, making the choices she's made? How can we be understanding? How to overcome it? Because sometimes we can work through it. And when it might be time to say goodbye.
Okay, we're going to take a quick ad break. And when we get back, I want to ask you a specific, like how to handle a hard conversation with one of these friends. We'll be right back. Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in-line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/noise, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/noise to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/noise. There's definitely been times in my life where my paycheck ran out before I got paid again, and I wish I could have accessed my next paycheck a few days before I was due to get it. Well, what if I told you that can happen with Earnin? Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. Just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. You can use Earnin for anything you need to, therapy visits, rent, or even extra self-help books. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, "When I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. It gives me a lot of peace of mind." Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Noise under podcast when you sign up. It really helps the show. Noise under podcast. Subject to your available earnings, location, daily max, and pay period max. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. Okay, before the break, we were talking about those challenging friends, the most common ones. And can you give, I'm imagining that, say, I've seen this more so, I think, and maybe I've seen it on social media too, but friends maybe in your 20s and 30s, I don't know, maybe it goes beyond that, but the friend who makes just kind of like digging comments every mm-hmm. once in a while, you know, kind of just kind of trying to take you down off your pedestal, or it can be similar to the negative friend. Mm-hmm. How on earth do you have a conversation with that person without, you know, hurting their feelings, or just does it kind of come with the territory? Like, can you walk us through that?
Yeah. So I'm really kind of connecting with what you just said, which is without hurting her feelings. And that's exactly what holds us back a lot of times from engaging a hard conversation. And I think on the surface of that, it's a good thing. That's a noble concern. I think it's a demonstration of our compassion, right? That we're like, I don't want to hurt her. But at what point am I self-sacrificing to not hurt her? That's called ruinous empathy. I'm so concerned about how you feel. I'm going to suppress, deny, dilute how I feel. And strong friendships make space for both. And so if you have a friend and you are like, I know I'm not crazy, those things she's saying feel kind of shady. Mm-hmm. One thing I would advise is if it's multiple times, right? Not just like the one time, but it's happened more than once and you're like, I feel like she's being kind of hostile.
Becomes a pattern. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, this is a regular thing. The first thing I would suggest is to make sure you use language that doesn't speak broadly, but it's very specific and points to tangible evidence. So for example, I personally would avoid anything that's like, I feel like you have an attitude. I feel like you were being shady. I mean, that's so intangible and elusive. And anybody's going to be like, what are you talking about? No, I'm not. And then give you examples of how they're not that thing. Mm-hmm. So we're going in circles. It's not productive. So instead, I might say, I'm asking as an invitation instead of an accusation. So I'm not going to say, you know, you were giving attitude and I don't know what that's about because anybody's going to shut down. Instead, I might say, hey, at the party yesterday, I said this and then you said this. And I wasn't sure what to make of that. What did you mean? So the first thing I'm doing is I'm asking a question because maybe I misunderstood, but I'm also letting you know I clocked that. And we need to kind of, we need to like, you know, so I heard it, I saw it. I'm curious, as opposed to like, I heard what you said and that was messed up. Hey, you said this yesterday after I did XYZ. And I'm just so curious, like, what did you mean by that? Mm-hmm. You could even go one step further if it's happened multiple times and say, what did you mean by that? Because the story I'm telling myself is that you were kind of trying to humble me a little bit, but I could be wrong. Like, what did you mean? Okay. And I'm giving you space to, it's a dialogue. This is a chance for her to admit, okay, yeah, I was feeling some kind of way. That was not okay. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. It's a chance for her to say like, oh my gosh, no. I promise you. I just was trying to talk about, okay. Oh, I understand. But I'm more concerned about how the friend responds afterwards. If it's, no, I didn't. If it's, I didn't know you were sensitive about that.
Gaslighting or passive aggressive. Oh,
yeah. It makes it really difficult to be in relationship with people who lack self-awareness and they can't own their stuff. It's difficult to be in relationship with them. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that says something else, not just the shady comment, but when I bring it up to you, if we're denying the gaslighting, calling me sensitive, and it's just in your head. I mean, at the heart of all of this stuff is an issue of trust and safety. And mm-hmm. if we get to a point where I feel like I have to measure my words, I'm not sure if you're talking positively about me when I walk out the room, that's a basic fundamental issue, right? Yeah. And so it's really tough when that happens, but women who don't have the control, I guess, to manage their own feelings. And so it's coming out in passive aggressive digs. You need to go and process that, but it can't come at the expense of my esteem, safety, and comfort in this friendship.
Oh gosh. Okay. I've had both ends of that spectrum. I've had, you know, the friend who isn't nice about it. And usually, and I'm thinking more many, many years ago of my friendships, and, you know, my friend and I would both do this. We would let things pile up and pile up and pile up, sometimes over years. And then it would just like come out at a drunk, you know, night out at the club, and we'd end up in a fight and screaming and crying at each other. Oof. And then we worked it out, but I don't recommend that. And then I've also in my more recent years had the friend, I'm thinking of this one particular incident where I had just left my marriage, like literally like that week I was at her house and I was at my wit's end. And when my anxiety goes up, my irritability, there's a direct correlation between my irritability and my anxiety. And I was super short fused. I was short with her. And she asked me about it the next day and like gave me, you know, just like you said, like the space to explain. And I apologized. And I'm like, I am in like the darkest week of my life right now. And you were an easy target and I took it out on you. I'm really sorry. And so I appreciated that so much, which kind of brings me, when you were saying that, it made me think of the models that we have for female communication, especially on reality TV. Mm. I don't know if you ever talk about this, like on social media, but like I'm thinking of like Real Housewives, any reality show that the main people are women. I'm thinking of the Kardashians, and how they address conflict is terrible. Mm-hmm. And I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Like, I don't know if I've ever seen any, because it's not that exciting to not have drama. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that? Just in general with what was modeled for us on media?
Yeah, I have three thoughts on that. The first is I hate to bust the bubble of people who like watch Housewives, but a lot of them are not really friends to begin with. To begin with, maybe they're in the same social circles, like in reality, in the same social circles. And this crew, this casting crew is putting together who would make a good cast. So I want to start right there with a lot of them are not really tight, close, reasonable friends to begin with. Okay. And then secondly, to your point, like there has to be drama. So, you know, you got to have the highs and the lows and the he said, she said to make us watch the show. But the last thing I want to say is the reason why I think it's so dysfunctional, what we're seeing is because I feel like one of two things happen when we're confronted with tension. The first is we immediately perceive it as an attack. And depending on how we were shaped around the idea of conflict growing up, we might bring that into our friendships. Like your personal stuff, you are bringing into friendship. You cannot compartmentalize that. So if you constantly felt attacked or criticized, maybe as a woman, you kind of take the idea of like, I'm not letting people talk down to me. I'm not letting people walk over me. And you overcorrect. Now you're shouting. Now you're attacking. Now you perceive any feedback as a personal attack and it's too much. But again, you might be overcorrecting for genuinely having been hurt. And I can understand that and empathize with that, but that does not a good friendship make. But on the other end, you have women who do not confront, and it is terrifying for them to say, hey, what did you mean by that comment last night? And instead, I'm going to go and talk to my other friend and be like, hey, did you see what she said? That was shady, right? And that friend's like, it sure was shady. And then you're going to go and look at her Instagram and read her caption and be like, is this about me? You're trying to read the subtext. And I think that's because, you know, first of all, culturally, I feel like sometimes there's not enough space that we have to confront without looking like a difficult woman. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us don't want to be perceived as difficult. So I'm just going to like say nothing. Or worse, if you ask me, hey, Danielle, are we good? I'm going to lie. Oh my gosh. Yeah, of course. Of course. What do you mean? Because it's important to us to maintain an appearance of being cooperative. So I don't want to tell you like, yeah, that was foul yesterday, what you did. And I feel really uneasy about it. I'm going to say, no. Oh my gosh. We're cool. But then that's going to present itself as the passive aggressiveness, resentment, because I'm not allowing myself to work through something that's actually really healthy. And the last thing I'll say is, you know, the research shows that platonic intimacy lies on the other side of healthy conflict. So conflict is good. It's an opportunity to meet a need or solve a problem. But a lot of us, we just have so many dysfunctional responses to it. And it's really sad to see it. I mean, amplified and distorted on TV.
Mm-hmm. So much. Yeah. I want to ask you about platonic intimacy in just a minute, but I did a mini-sode a couple of months ago because I got hooked on watching Selling Sunset and Selling the OC.
So good.
I know. Well, like the dresses, like, are you kidding? The clothes. I never, you guys can't see, but Danielle's doing a little dance over there. I never really got into any of the Real Housewives except Orange County a million years ago, like when my kids were babies. I'm talking like a decade and a half ago. And fun fact, my son Colton, I heard the name Colton from one of the very first cast members of the Real Housewives of OC. Her teenage son was named Colton. And I don't, she's not even on there anymore. She was married to like a baseball player or something. I don't even remember her name. Mm-hmm. But first season, my teenage son hates that story. It's a great name. It's a great name. I did a mini-sode on it because I was so appalled at many things. There was a conflict between Chriselle and Nicole. I was appalled at the lack of accountability, the lack of taking responsibility for their terrible behavior. And I'm like, y'all, it's recorded. Your behavior, like there is record of you behaving so poorly, both of them. And then one of them took a little bit of responsibility and the other one didn't. She like doubled down. And so then that caused even more conflict. I was like, oh my God, this is terrible. They need a friendship coach.
That accountability piece is so hard. And I just did a video on this and we throw that word around. Like accountability means that you gently remind me of the standards that I set, of the commitments I made. So if I said I'm going to do something and I don't, or vice versa, or if I say I'm going to, you know, champion this person and then I don't, I do something backstabbing and you say, hey, Danielle, come on now, what you said was not okay. So many of us are deeply uncomfortable sitting in the hot seat. I'm going to be honest. I am. Like, it's not fun. Mm-mm. But a lot of us cannot muster the humility to say, yeah, you're right. That was not okay. And I should never make you feel that way. And I am so sorry. And again, that's why I'm so interested in not the wrongdoings that our friends do, because your friends are going to hurt you. Yeah. Your friends are going to disappoint you. They shouldn't be doing it intentionally. I think that's something else entirely, but they're going to let you down. I am always curious about the second part. What after that? Can we overcome it? Can she say, yeah, that's my stuff. That wasn't cool. That creates resilience in a friendship. But for people who don't have that skill, I don't know. I don't see healthy friendship for them.
John Gottman talks a lot about that in romantic relationships around the repair. And there's a lot of parenting experts that talk about it too. And I truly think it is one of the best skills to learn in terms of all of your relationships, friendships, you know, parent-child, romantic relationships. I want to circle back to you talk about the ways that women people please. And I know a lot of my community listening struggles with that behavior. How that delays platonic intimacy. I know you talked on it briefly, because can you dive in a little bit and like how can you give us like a tip on how to start to try to stop doing that and how to remedy that behavior?
I'm so glad you asked that. Yeah, I don't think a lot of us make a connection between experiencing intimacy and friendship and being a people pleaser. The platonic intimacy is all about being known. Mm-hmm. But if you are a people pleaser, you are highly attuned to other people's feelings. You don't want to make them uncomfortable. And typically that means You are not sharing your true opinions, preferences, desires. Well, if I'm not telling you what I need, what I prefer, what my boundaries are, I will never be known in my friendships. So now I'm walking around with friends that I have who I enjoy well enough, but they do not really know me. And we have to remind ourselves, while it feels risky sometimes to speak up and to say, hey, that wasn't cool, or actually I prefer that we do this and not that, or hey, that makes me uncomfortable. While it feels very risky and confrontational to say that, the right people want that data. I know I do. I need friends who can say to me, Daniel, actually, I do not want to go there, or I don't want to do that, or love it. Love it. It takes out the guesswork. I feel like I'm learning you better and what you need. And it gives me confidence in our friendship. And it's just something that we have to kind of put two and two together. Every time we say, I'm not going to say anything, or I don't want to ruffle feathers, you have to remind yourself, I'm risking not being truly known in this friendship. They go together. And so one way to start is, I always like to suggest, like, starting with the small things that are low risk, so it doesn't feel like such a big mountain to climb. So it could be, I mean, small, like, you know, your friend saying like, oh, let's go to this restaurant, and you hate that restaurant. That is a low risk thing to say, like, okay, maybe next time, but it's not my favorite. I was actually thinking we could do Chinese. Like, what do you think? Okay. That should not break a friendship. That should not have anybody looking at you sideways. If anything, maybe it's a starting point for a negotiation. Oh, I don't know about that place, but like, okay, how about we compromise? You want to go to the right people are open to negotiating, and they want to hear your voice. So I always start with starting small on things that don't feel like it's such a risk or threat to the friendship. And then from there, I think with all the decisions you make, whenever you find yourself kind of like silencing, just ask yourself, do I want to be known? And I know that sounds really intense, but I think it's a question that operates as a really helpful guide of how to behave, and it informs the decisions that we make.
Do I want to be known? I love that. Thank you for that. We have to take one more break. When we come back, I want to talk to you about like how to know if a friendship is worth saving. We'll be right back.
I've taken several classes with Masterclass on things like communication, entrepreneurship, and storytelling, and absolutely loved every one because of their caliber of instructors and how concise the classes are. With Masterclass, you can learn from the best to become your best. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to every instructor. You can make new habits with New York Times bestselling author James Clear, improve your physical and mental well-being with leading gut health experts, or build stronger relationships with renowned psychotherapist Esther Perel. She is so amazing. I had gotten curious about how to be a better communicator, so I took the Art of Negotiation class with Chris Voss, and it helped me to do things like read body language, read speech patterns, and so much more, so I can better communicate with who, you ask? My teenagers. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Don't wait another moment to start your learning journey with Masterclass. Right now, our listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/Andrea. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/Andrea. Masterclass.com/Andrea. Trying to find the perfect gift for someone special in your life, maybe for Mother's Day, but feeling overwhelmed? Finding a unique gift that they'll love, that's personal and that they won't already have, can be the ultimate challenge. That's why I'm so excited I've discovered Songfinch. It's an amazing, thoughtful gift, and it's easy and fun to make. Songfinch lets you create an original radio-quality song inspired by your own life and the people you love. It's completely unique, personal, and lasts forever. I had Songfinch make me a song about my dad, which was a gift to myself. This was such a personal song for me, and I was a little skeptical the artist could capture the emotion I wanted. But during the process, they have you share some personal details about your relationship with the person you're creating the song for. Then a Songfinch musician of your choice, you get to pick based on samples they have, will write, record, and produce your original song in just 4 to 7 days. I love my song so much. I was so emotional when I listened to it. I had no changes. It's perfect. Whether your song is for Father's Day, an upcoming graduation, wedding, or anniversary, or even just a gift to show your loved one how much you care, start your song now to lock in one of Songfinch's top artists. For a limited time, Songfinch is letting our listeners upload their song to Spotify for free, so you and the lucky person you gift it to can listen to it anywhere, anytime. Go to songfinch.com/noise and start your song. After you purchase, you'll be prompted to add Spotify streaming for your original song for free, a $50 value. Again, my URL is songfinch.com/noise. Don't forget to share your song with us too. songfinch.com/noise.
Do
So let's talk about the person who maybe has a friend, because a lot of the women that listen to this podcast are, you know, millennial Gen X. And so we've been around, and a lot of times we have friendships, maybe they're recent, but sometimes they're, you know, 10, 20 years of history, and maybe some things have happened, or maybe they're long distance. Even it's just like time and distance has separated the friendship. How do you know if a friendship is worth saving? Like, how do you know how invested the both of you are to do that?
Yeah. So there's a couple things. The first is, I mean, this sounds extremely pedestrian and reductive, but to start with like a pros and cons list. And I know that sounds reductive, but sometimes even just seeing it down on paper, like, wait a second, she offers me a lot. And the things I'm putting on the con list are either annoyances or things that are minor, but they're not real deal breakers. They're just inconvenient at times and they annoy me. So kind of looking at the things that you have listed on the ways that this friendship offers value to my life, how much weight are we assigning to each of those things? And how much weight does the items on the negative list really carry, truly? The second would be, how do you guys work through conflict? I think that's always a really big thing. Whenever there's tension, we do okay. We find a way back to each other. That's hard to come by. And so if you have somebody who, when we give each other feedback, it's safe here. It's safe to say how I feel. And she knows she can tell me how she feels and I won't withdraw or abandon her. I think that's really special and that counts for something. And then finally is, do you find yourself kind of with the energy to carry it? Because, and I know this might not sound hunky-dory, but sometimes we want out of a friendship and we find that we don't even have the energy to ask about the developments of her life anymore because we're just kind of over it. And nobody has to be the villain for you to finally want to leave. I think it makes it easier. It's easier when a friend screws you over to say like, you know what, I'm so done. It's easy. Yeah. It's harder when things are a little gray area and you're like, she's a good person. She has my back, but I don't know. I don't feel motivated to be like, hey, what's going on? Or when I call her, I feel like I ought to call her and check in, and I'm being polite when she comes over, but I'm kind of over it and we have nothing in common. Personally, I think that's enough, because I know that if things were flipped around and I had any friend who was carrying me because she felt like she should, and she was trying to be nice, I'd be like, girl, free me from the shackles of obligation. You know what I'm saying? And so I just feel like, look at what value this friend offers to your life. Do you feel safe? Do they offer a sense of pleasure and joy? Do you find that you grow with them? Those are really important things. But if you're trying to make sense of where do I invest my time and who do I pour into, and you find that you don't have the energy or motivation to carry it, then maybe you don't release it overall, but maybe you would adapt the time that you spend and the intention that you direct in that particular relationship.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you for the 1-2-3s on that. And that's just going to be some hard things to think about and carry through with the action steps. One more question for you before we close up. And that's, I know last time we talked about how to make friends. And can you tell us a little bit of how to deepen the connections that we have with our existing friendships?
Yes, I love this question, because one of the number one questions I get is how to make friends, which is totally valid, because when we're in transitional seasons in our lives, people are typically open to inviting new connections into our lives. So a lot of people ask about, you know, making friends, but for a lot of us, we're like, actually, you know, I make friends just fine. It's the deepening, because I really want to be seen, known, and I want deep friendship, but I don't know how to go about that. And so there are a couple things you can do. The first is identify like your 3 to 5 people who you're most curious about deepening with. Because what I've noticed, especially for extroverts, I'm talking to myself, we want to go wide instead of deep. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to do all the coffee dates with all the ladies and all the things. And I think that's really nice. But at some point, we have to concentrate our efforts and our time and our top people if we want to go deep instead of wide. In fact, the research shows that it takes 34 hours to move somebody from an acquaintance to a friend. So at some point, I've got to get clear about the people I'm most curious about and I see the most reward from. And I don't mean that selfishly, but that I'd get the most value from deepening and find ways to be kind of intentional there would be the first thing, is like our targets that we're directing our efforts toward. The second thing is you have to increase consistency, because you cannot create that depth without time. So again, I know we're crunched for time, especially these days. We're doing all the things and capitalism is wearing us down and we're burned out. And I acknowledge all of that. But we've got to get creative about how we can clock some hours with our friend. You cannot get around that. At some point, me sending fire emojis in response to your Instagram stories ain't going to cut it.
Yeah.
At some point, mm-hmm. we've got to spend some time settling in and really talking, as opposed to doing those quick catch-ups that we do where we've got 30 minutes and we're scratching the surface, which is nice. You take what you can get. But how can I find ways to invite you into my life? So that means getting comfortable inviting you to come to Target with me. It's mm-hmm. not sexy, but that's how I'm going to get my 2 hours in with you this week, you know? So redefine what it looks like to hang out. And then the last thing I would say is vulnerability. And it doesn't just mean crying about all my feelings and telling all my traumas, but I always stress this vulnerability. The best way I've heard it defined is taking a risk of being rejected. And that doesn't always mean talking about your mental health issues and all that, especially if you're comfortable talking about those things, then by definition, it's not vulnerability. What are the things that for you feel risky and you really want to do them? It might mean that she's a newish friend and you want to get to know her better. And it feels risky to say, hey, I'm so curious about you. Like, I want to get to know you better. Feels really risky. Mm-hmm. And it might be the very thing you need to start experiencing depth with that friend.
Yeah.
It might be letting yourself make mistakes in front of her or share kind of fears or things you feel awkward about. It might even be, especially with women, sharing wins in mm-hmm. front of each other, which feels risky because now I look like I think I'm all of that. Mm-hmm. So what feels like a social risk for you in your friendships? Because depth might be on the other side of that risky, scary thing. And taking those chances brings us closer. And the last thing I'll say is appreciation. It's so basic, but the research shows that people who voice appreciation, just like articulating it verbally to your friends, makes them feel some kind of way that leaves an emotional impression that bonds you. So if you can say to me, oh, she knows I appreciate her. Like, that's so obvious. I would ask you, what tangible evidence could she point to? Mm-hmm. And if you are struggling to come up with it, I think today would be a great day to yeah. text her, to send her something, just saying like, it was so glad to see you at the party last night. You were always like the highlight of any event. Like, so glad to have your humor and your friendship in my life. Period. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You know, so those are some things that if you want depth, can help you to start achieving it little by little.
I love that. I love that so much. And I take sometimes people through this curriculum that I'm certified in the work of Dr. Brené Brown, and we talk about friendships. And that's one of the things that I assign. It's like the second, it's only the second module where we talk. I want to know, who are the key players? Like, what are their first names? How long have you known them? Like, how often do you talk to them? And almost 100% of the time, one of the assignments that I give them is to do that. Just what you said, whether it's like, some clients prefer going and picking out a Hallmark card. A lot of them will send a text or like a voice note over specifically, not like in passing, specifically for that reason, saying, I appreciate you. I was thinking of you, and here's why. And it comes down to that, you know, trust is built in small increments over time, and it mm-hmm. matters. So yeah. I wanted to high five that. The book is Fighting for Our Friendships. And of course, that'll be in the show notes. Where do you want people to go? Do you have fun bonuses for the book? And if so, can you tell us about them?
We do. So everything lives at betterfemalefriendships.com. And that's where you can simply input your order number after you buy the book. And then you just start, you get in the little funnel there for all these bonuses. So the very first one we launched was an audio course, which is we call it Better Friend Bootcamp. And so we've done it for a couple years now, but it's exclusive to people who pre-order to have it in this particular format. And every day for 21 days, I'm in your ear saying, do this thing today, and it is guaranteed to help you feel more satisfied with your current friendship landscape. And a lot of that starts with us, not mm-hmm. just going and finding better people, but how do I need to change my perspective, my attitude to enjoy better friendships? So that's the very first bonus. And then there are two more. So I really hope that people go over there at betterfemalefriendships.com and look around and get the book to at least start having the conversation around how can we enjoy more satisfaction in our friendships with other women. And I'm so grateful to you for the work that you do and for allowing me the space to come here and lend my voice to the conversation.
Well, you're welcome. I'm honored to have you here because also, I'm on the side of social media in the algorithm that serves me up once in a while, showing that research shows that women live longer when they have better friendships mm-hmm. and they're in circles of friends.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you want a long life, ladies, yeah, let's get it together.
Exactly. Fighting for Our Friendships at betterfemalefriendships.com. Everyone, thank you so much for your time and listening. I appreciate it so much that you choose to spend your time with me and my guests. And remember, it's our life's journey to make ourselves better humans and our life's responsibility to make the world a better place. Bye for now. Hey, everyone. Thanks again for listening. I would be so incredibly grateful if you haven't done so already, if you could leave a review of this podcast on Apple Podcasts. Super easy if you already listen to your shows over there. But if you don't, or maybe you have the app on your phone, but you listen to the show on a different app, if you could leave a review for this show, it matters so much. I wish I could express how much it matters. I also wish that it didn't matter so much, but alas, it does. So if you haven't already, please go review and rate the show. It would mean so much to me. And thank you so much. I hope you have an amazing day.
Hey, are you a parent of a teenager? Are you feeling overwhelmed about how to be what they need while also holding limits and boundaries that keep them safe? Are you tired of conversations that negate how messy this season of parenting is? Well, I've got you. My name is Casey O'Rourke. I am a positive discipline trainer, parent coach, and the host of the Joyful Courage podcast. Every week, I come to you with an interview, digging into tough topics with experts I trust and solo shows that go deep into the personal growth and mindset needed to raise teens in a way that grows them into confident, capable young people. I am not afraid of getting real about the intersection of conscious parenting and the teen years, while also bringing in vulnerability, humor, and lightness. I'm walking the path with you and honored to serve. Listen to Joyful Courage on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you consume podcasts.